I love to call it the best show in the whole wide world because I have the best set of analysts in the whole wide world. I got Oracle Kachi with me. I have Olale with me. And of course, I have Eddie Vendessa with me as well. So much to talk about on the show today. I'm buzzing right now. Ramadan Mubarak to our Muslim brothers. And of course, Happy Workers' Day to all Nigerians. And as we look forward to a glorious and new year for the Muslims and to a new year for the workers in Nigeria, we are going to be serving you the best sporting show in the whole of the universe. It's News Instructor Sports, airing live, of course, on a Bell Radio Scope. Get us on our YouTube channel, on Apple Podcasts, and on Spotify. Because I'm not feeling like Sonny Abacha today, I'm going to allow the guys to introduce themselves, and I'm going to be starting with Oracle Kachi.
Sports fans, always a pleasure to be here. It took just 2 minutes of my wife watching game one of the Eastern Conference semifinal between the Bucks and the Celtics for her to quickly identify who Giannis Antetokounmpo was. Unstoppable on the night. It's looking like what they did to the Brooklyn Nets would become an embarrassing footnote at the end of the career for Kevin Durant. Stay tuned for a cracking one.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that introduction. Of course, Lali, introduce yourself, please.
Hello, fans around the world. Welcome to the show. The NBA playoff is into the second round, and it seems Giannis is already stamping his authority on the playoffs. He recorded his second triple-double of his playoff career in today's win against the Celtics.
All right, perfect. And Shay?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of our sports show. It was quite a fantastic Champions League midweek last week. We saw arguably one of the best Champions League dropout match between Man City and Real Madrid. And also kudos to the Don Carlo Ancelotti for completing 5 trophies in top European leagues. All these will be digested during the show. You're welcome, everyone.
All right, perfect. Where do we start? We start from the NBA. It's the NBA season, and I don't care what anybody has to say about it. If you are not a basketball lover, my word, you should leave the sporting world. Kachi, I'm going to start with you on this one. There was a tweet came out in the middle of the week, 2016. Someone came out to say Ben Simmons down tools while he was with USL. As a young guy, he was still a rookie. And he prophesied, because it's a prophecy, because it actually came to pass, that Ben Simmons at a point is going to down tools to wherever he plays for in the NBA to go to LA because he loves LA. And he's going to down two for the 76ers. That was in 2016. And this is 2022, 6 years after. I was seeing a prophecy of that. And tracing it back historically, this guy is the only guy that sold out an entire stadium off the back that is going to be playing for Australia, but failed to turn up. This guy has failed to turn up every chance he gets in his career. I know people tend to say, Kyrie is a bad person. It's this, is that. James Harden is this, is that. He's a problem child. But Ben Simmons is a different kind of problem child. Kachi, I want to start with you on this before I jump to Olale.
Ben Simmons is a more embarrassing type of problem child, because with Kyrie, you know what you get. What you see really is what you get. It tells you what it's going to do, and it does it. Unlike the case of Ben Simmons, who I'm not sure I want to say he has allowed his talent get to his head, because it's not as if he's achieved anything particularly with that talent. This is just someone who, week in, week out, year in, year out, from his time in LSU to when he was drafted to when he moved to the Nets, has completely let not just the franchise down, but the city. I think Ben Simmons makes it really hard for those who support him, who are in his corner, to have a say, to even come out and say anything confidently. I listened to a lot of former NBA players come out to say, that there were days, even his current coach, when he was with the Lakers, when they were fighting to make the playoffs, Steve Nash played with a bad back. And every time he was subbed out, instead of sitting on the bench, would lie straight, lie on his back and allow the physio work on him for 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. What I'm really trying to say is that a bad back is not enough reason to miss what was potentially the biggest game of the year for the Brooklyn Nets. Because what they really needed was to win one game. And then you take it from one game and then you play another final and possibly win a second game. And then it's game on, you know. But the team needed him. He disappointed the team. I believe that right now in the dressing room, forget what the players come out to say, oh, we will come out stronger, we'll have a healthy Ben Simmons. No, I think that the players would look at that guy right in his eyes and say, you have let so many teams down. We cannot go to war with you and for you. It is actually in the right club because he doesn't have a very assertive leader who will come out and hold him accountable. I guess that's why he can thrive. But the very first franchise in the Sixers, having someone like Joel Embiid call him out, this guy sucked like a baby, demanded for $20 million for services he has not rendered. He has earned maybe another $12 or $13 million for services he has not rendered. He should be put on the most wanted fugitive list by the FBI. It's a complete disappointment. Right now, I think he's more a bigger villain than Kyrie Irving. And I really don't know where his career will go after this contract expires. I really don't know.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that, Kachi. Olari, I'm going to come to you. It seems there's always a poor choice with the Nets. First was Kyrie. KD was a good addition. Then after a war, they added another problem child in James Harden. James Harden left. They now brought in a bigger problem that potentially is going to throw the franchise off balance. Honestly, what's the way forward for the Nets? Because we never know what Kyrie is going to do next season. You don't know what Kyrie will come out. Ben Simmons, you don't even know what he's going to. He might say his head is damaged. He doesn't want to play for the next 2 years. You don't know what these guys are going to come up with. And they have a very docile leader in the mode of KD. And to make matter worse, they have a very unattentive, the act of ineptitude in a coach in Steve Nash. And you look at this, all this in conjunction, I'm like, oh, no, this is a wrong combination. Where do they go from here? Olali.
Yeah, for the Brooklyn Nets, it's very easy to analyze their issues, but there are no easy way out for them. We all know the NBA is a star-dominated league. They have a lot of difficult choices, which it's very easy to present, but I don't think it's something that is easy to, to sort out. I think what the Brooklyn Nets could probably hope for is for a change, Kevin Durant. I think that would be the first thing. If we could see a Kevin Durant who is ready to be that outspoken leader, who is ready to, holding himself accountable, I don't think that is the issue. KD is a very good professional. But when it comes to holding other people's accountable, that is where the issue comes from. When it comes to issues of things that are paining him, not saying it out, that is where the issue comes from. I think that will be their most easiest, because Kyrie said something after the loss against, I think Kachi shared that list on RDC. Kyrie said something after the loss to the Celtics. He said him, KD and Sean Marks, we see how to move the franchise forward. That statement in Kyrie's head is like a franchise player that the franchise that cannot do anything without. That is what is in his head. Whereas he's not exhibiting any example of such a player. And the only person that is allowing Kyrie to do all these things and get away with it is KD. If KD can change his position, because if KD can change his position about Kyrie, the franchise will know how to handle his case. I think another thing they will need to do, they will probably do you know the reason why they had to hire Steve Nash? Steve Nash is a kind of a coach too that can't say what Kyrie wants is this. It's not like Kyrie doesn't want to play. Kyrie wants to play he wants to play at his own time. He wants to do everything at his own pace, at his own time, not at the team's. So everything depends on KD, because the third guy they have now, which is Ben Simmons, like you guys have already alluded to, it's a bigger issue. It's a bigger issue. Because for me, there are two things we have to consider about Ben Simmons. Number one thing is this: the issue of mental health. Everybody in the NBA world, they've been very, very careful in terms of trying to delve into that. Nobody wanted to probably say Ben Simmons is lying about that. But there is 90% chance that the old news about his mental health, because he knew that people were very careful in terms of trying to call probably to say he's lying about his mental health. It's a very easy excuse not to play with what you want for the Philadelphia 76ers. Now, the back issue that he's talking about, I heard it on one of the sports shows that they said it is the most difficult, injury to diagnose.
Yes,
except for the person affected. If I don't tell you that I have bad bone, no, you can't do anything. it is very hard. Can you add them together? Mental health, bad bone, two issues that you can hardly hold him accountable for. Those are the issues he's using. Now, after game two, they said he could be ready for game four. A lot of people were saying if he could be ready for game four, he should be ready for game three.
Before the start of the series, they said he could be ready for the first round.
So now, the only reason why he didn't play in game four, let me just tell you, is because they lost game three. He doesn't want to be part of the whole mess. That was just it. And after that game, the next thing they now have to tell the Brooklyn Nets organization is that about his mental health. You guys have to be consistent. So for the Brooklyn Nets, for now, Kyrie and Ben Simmons, these two guys, in terms of how GMs, mate view them around the league, they don't really have much credibility. They don't really have much credibility. So in terms of trade value, you know, at the beginning of the season, even before they traded James Harden, it could have been easier for them to trade Kyrie. But who actually wanted Kyrie?
Nobody.
And Kyrie, there was one particular news that came out where Kyrie said, if he's traded by the Brooklyn Nets, he's going to retire.
Yeah.
So they are in a mess. They only have two options. They pray that KD starts holding people responsible. And probably they need to change the coach and probably get a coach who can look at Kyrie and tell KD that you guys are doing, your friendship is a fake friendship. They need somebody to call them out. Not a Steve Nash that will be hanging around with them, be smiling. They will tell him the kind of play they want him to call. Because from Kyrie and KD's head, the world is against them. For now, the world is against them, which is and another option for the franchise is just to dismantle the whole project and start afresh again. That's the second option. It's very difficult when you have a player like KD at his peak like this. You always feel like you can do something special. You can do something special, but the way it looks like, KD himself is not looking at his legacy. He's not looking at the way he's being perceived around the league. He's not looking. The truth is, KD is by far, far, far talented than Giannis. In as much as Giannis is doing great things, but KD can end his career, and it, we might consider Giannis as a greater player than KD in terms of accomplishment.
Steph Curry, we saw
KD and Steph Curry when they were in the same team. It was obvious that KD was the best player on that team. But Steph Curry, if Steph Curry end this season winning the championship, he will be considered as a greater player than KD. Yeah, he needs to think about those things. Rather than fighting Charles Barkley on the internet, he needs to consider his legacy.
But since you've got into that, Kachi, and I'm going to come to you right now, since Olali has got into that. Part of what I was going to ask is mental states, and I believe we've already dissected that. And there's a question about his legacy. He's been a legend. You look at KD, and he's in the mode of the best NBA players of all time. No question, no doubt. I don't care if anybody disagrees with me on the show, but that's my opinion. I stand to be corrected, but I'm not apologetic about it. You know, but you look at it and be like, oh, this guy's going to finish his career sometime soon, unfortunately. And how is he going to be rated against the greats? And when I'm talking about the greats, I'm talking about the Hakeem Olajuwons, I'm talking about the Allen Iversons, the Kobe Bryants, the Shaq O'Neals, you know, because he's up there with them. But how are we going to perceive him as a legend or his legacy in a couple of years' time? Kachi?
All right, before I get into that, I'll give a quick, just a very quick comparison. One of the reasons why many of the old journalists who covered NBA, one of the reasons why they still pick Michael Jordan as the greatest ever NBA player above LeBron James is the fact that they think LeBron is too nice, right? And LeBron is too buddy-buddy with opponents, which does not have the killer instinct that Michael Jordan was famous for. Now, if we're going to hold that same touch to Kevin Durant, then not only is Kevin Durant too nice, Kevin Durant is too timid to come out and verbally tell you what he thinks. Instead, he hides behind burner Twitter accounts to tweet his opinions, not even using his real account. Now, I'm saying that to come back to what his legacy would ultimately say. His legacy would say one of the best pure shooters ever. Probably the best pure shooter you've seen in the game of basketball, but a timid and naive leader. Not one who could not, as a sign of true friendship, tell those he perceived as his friends the truth. What LeBron will never be judged harshly for is him making decisions that hurt people he calls his friend. You will see him make all those funny handshakes with Kyle Kuzma. But when he needed to get Kuzma shipped out, Kuzma would get shipped out, you know? So for me, that is really what the legacy will say. The legacy will say a very great person, but a very great player, but one who could not do it all by himself. He went to a team that already won 73 games without him in order to win his championship. And even when he decided to do it all by himself, creating his own super team, which everyone is allowed to do, no one will blame him for that, they will still hold that against him. And everybody will come back to rate Kevin Durant, especially if the Bucks this year would do unto the Celtics in the series what Kevin Durant could not even do in one game, which is defeat the Celtics and go on to the Eastern Conference Final, or probably because of the injury to Embiid, probably represent the Eastern Conference as well. KD will be seen as a gifted player who did not use his intangible skills to get the best of the people around him. And it's going to be like the story of Shaq.
Okay.
Because like you said, I think there are two prayers for KD, for me, this postseason that he needs to be praying against. One will likely happen. Let me say three. If the Bucks beat the Celtics in like four or five games, it's not going to be a good look for KD. Ultimately, which is very likely, if the Bucks end up winning the championship, it's a disaster for KD.
Okay.
And if the Golden State Warriors wins the championship, it's a disaster for KD. So KD does those two things. He doesn't need those two teams to win the championship.
It's going to happen. Anyways, let's call the playoffs preview right now, and I want to take your opinion. And Sheyi, you're not going to be left out. I don't care. You're not going to be left out of this one. So I'm going to start with you, Olale, because you spoke last. The Bucks versus Celtics. What do you think is going to be? How many games? 4 games, clean sweep, take it to game 7, or what?
After watching this first game, it was a gruesome, encounter. Very, very physical. It's been long I've seen the NBA this physical, and which was one of the things that affected the Brooklyn Nets. They didn't get a lot of calls. I think, Celtics are now suffering the same fate in the hand
That's what you get when you have a good coach.
They have the presence in the rim. This guy, Lopez, was big tonight. What's the name of Bobby Portis? Was very
Bobby
big.
Portis.
Yeah. The
Celtics will need probably to shoot better from the three for them to have any reasonable chance.
And it looks like Smart is going to be out for a while. So,
and what do you call it? The Bucks,
the bench players
for the Bucks. You just have to like be happy for them. It's very rare for a franchise. It's very difficult for franchise in small cities or small towns. Or let me say in a white dominated area, because Milwaukee is actually Wisconsin as a state,
it's
is a white dominated area.
It's a red state, yeah.
Yes. It's very rare you see stars that wants to go or talent that wants to go there. Grayson Allen and some couple of guys from their bench are doing a lot for them.
Okay.
And for what Giannis was doing today basically was anytime they.
So are you saying it's going to be a
looks from what I saw today, I don't know the kind of adjustment the Celtics will have to make to survive this. They'll probably have to shoot the light out from the three for them to have any chance from winning this series. They have to shoot like 45% from three in
from
four
the three,
games
yeah, to win
for them to go through. If not, because they are not going to get joy getting to the paint against this Milwaukee Bucks.
No, today.
I'll probably call a 4-1.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Catchy. The Warriors and the Grizzlies. Warriors are leading right now, 68-66. Looks like a body game right now.
I'm going to echo what Jalen said on ESPN during the preview of the show. I think the Warriors will win the series, but it looks like the Grizzlies will nick game one. And I'm only saying that because the Warriors have rested way too long. The Grizzlies are coming off a tough first round that lasted 6 games. So they are in a better game mode mindset than the Warriors, even though the Warriors definitely have better shooters, more experienced players. I think it goes to 6 games, but I give the series to the Warriors. Definitely.
Of course, you have to give the series to the Warriors. Otherwise, I'm going to remove you from the show right now. Shay, I'm coming for you. I don't care. The 76ers and the Miami Heat. Just tell me, who do you think is going to win? 76ers or the Miami Heat? Honestly.
I think the Miami Heat. Go for the Miami Heat.
The Miami Heat. Okay.
Your pick is actually very right.
I agree.
What's the status of Joel Embiid? That's the most important.
Embiid may be back for game 4 based on the prognosis right now. It's tentative because it's concussion and an orbital fracture in the eye.
By game 4 it's going to be Olale the Suns and the Mavericks.
The old guard versus the new guard. That's a bit tricky. The Dallas, if you look at the Dallas team very well, I think everybody knows their role now. Luka Doncic is the superstar. Every other person follows. Unlike when they have Kristaps Porzingis, where nobody knows where Porzingis fits in now. And what they what the Dallas Mavericks have done so far is to surround Luka Doncic with very, very good defenders, guys who are ready to defend very well. So Luka is very, very intelligent. The Suns are the most complete team in the NBA, at least based on what we saw during the regular season. And with Devin Booker back, I don't know whether he could probably last 30, 40 minutes. I don't know how far he has recovered from the hamstring. It's going to be an interesting series. It's going to be DeAndre Ayton. I don't know how much joy he's going to get from the paint playing because they will need him. It's going to be a factor in this series because Luka Doncic is going to wear out Chris Paul a lot. So whatever Bridges and Ayton can give them, we go a long way.
Long way.
Determine who wins this series. The Suns have the better roster. If they can make use of their roster very well, I see them probably win this series in six games.
In six games. Oh, wow. No, that's a big call. What about you, Kachi?
I also think it will boil down to who can utilize the small ball lineup better. Because right now, DeAndre Ayton, we're not really sure what we can get from him. Mikal Bridges as well. Potentially would always get into foul trouble playing against the Dallas small ball lineup. I still think it goes to six. I still think on paper, the Phoenix Suns are better. They got a scare. They realized right now that the West is not a piece of cake and they have to sit up. I definitely want to see my bracket because my bracket is still alive. I want to see the Phoenix Suns Golden State Warriors Western Conference Final that gets to seven games. So I'm picking the Phoenix Suns to win in six.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much. I think I should not be left out. I should be able to pick mine. So definitely I'm going to pick the Golden State Warriors, the Suns, the Bucks, and of course, what's the last game again? Please remind me.
Miami, Philadelphia.
Of course, I'm going to go with Jimmy Butler. So.
I'm going with James Harden. My guy is coming. He's going to put on the show.
James Harden would not be able to do anything in the playoffs. We saw it the last time. James, I love him.
Just give James Harden the nightlife he wants.
Philadelphia is not really known for its nightlife. Instead, it's known for their blue collar
Eastern
Conference. Yes. So if you're going to come there and party all through the night, you will not be loved by the franchise. And that is really where Ben Simmons started his problem from. He was not a franchise, a city that is known for working hard.
I'm gonna ignore you like I ignore Lali. Why do you have to go to the back?
Don't ignore him now. He's making a point for me.
Anyways, shout out to the Toronto Maple Leafs. First game against the Kachi, remind me again. I don't know.
They're playing the Tampa Bay Lightning, the defending champions.
Okay.
NHL.
We wish them good luck as they move to the next one. All right, perfect. Thank you very much. I believe we've already said what needs to be said about the playoffs right now. Shay, I'm coming to you now. Kayano wants to move up to the next scale. And there's an expression of, a scared expression on my part that's, Is he weighing enough to jump into the next weight division? And the person is fighting against, would he be able to hold his forte against him? Kayano, for all we know, is a pound to pound boxer that likes to go toe to toe. So what is his chances going to the next fight? As now that he's avoiding GGG.
I think your your concerns about the weight difference in super middleweight and the light heavyweight is a good concern, but I think for Canelo that should not be any major issue. If you look at the difference between these two weight divisions, you are looking at 3 to 4 kg thereabouts.
Oh wow!
So it's not a massive weight
difference.
Yeah, difference in kind of in terms of jumping to the upper division. Also, if you look at majority of the guys ruling the light heavyweight at the moment, I can't say I've seen someone that, you know, commands the type of experience, the type of exposure, and the type of skill that Canelo possess. At the moment. So I don't see a big issue for him going into that particular weight division. The only issue I have with him going into that division is I know the only thing he's looking at is to probably unify that particular division also. Because if you look at the division, you look at Artur Beterbiev with two belts there. He's trying to fight Bivol now, and also there's I think a British guy, Joe Smith or something like that, holding the fourth belt. So definitely after this, you expect Canelo to want to fight probably at a better beef.
Okay.
Unify like three bits out of that division.
Oh, wow.
So I think that is what Canelo is looking at the moment.
Okay.
He doesn't want to go to the lesser weight division. He has already beaten the king of the so-called division in terms of GGG.
Yeah.
So I don't see any big issue.
But quick question, Shay, before we go forward. Does he have to vacate his belt right now, going to the next division, or he will still hold on to it in case he loses and go back to the whole division? What happens with that?
It will definitely hold on to it. In fact, as we speak, the former division he left, which is the middleweight, if I believe, there's a belt in the middleweight that Canelo actually holds still now. So he doesn't need to vacate that. He's jumping up and let's see what happens. Even though I still believe he's a favorite for this bout.
For the next
If you look at the experience of the guys in lightweight, I don't think they stand a chance against Canelo. Unless they can use their because quite a lot of them are taller than Canelo. They have the reach, and Bivol, from what I've seen over the years, it looks like a fast boxer for his height. But at the same time, I think Canelo has seen it all. He'll probably just bring that to the table and hedge him in this particular fight.
All right. So are you saying if I go to the bookies right now, I should put my money on Canelo? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it is your money. Put it.
No. Are you advising me to put my money on Canelo?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right. Perfect. We're going to quick break right now. And when we come back, we'll be jumping into the footballing world where we have so much. From Carlo Ancelotti to, of course, the Super League being a mirror of the new UEFA Champions League. Don't go anywhere, guys. We'll be right back. Yeah, so jumping straight into the footballing world right now. And I'm looking at the new format for the Champions League. They call it the Swiss model. And from the 24-25 season, this will involve every team playing in a single league at the group stage, with a guarantee of at least 10 games. And there will be 36 teams in the Champions League, four more than the current 32 that we have right now. And the freaky thing about it, or what freaks me out about it, is there's a semi-guarantee for the top teams across Europe to go to the Champions League directly, as long as they finish within a certain bracket within their league. So take for instance now, we have the top six clubs in England, the Manchester clubs, the top three clubs from London, and of course the only good club from the Merseyside, which makes it six. As long as they finish in the top six, those six teams are guaranteed a spot in the Champions League. And I'm looking at it from the perspective of the Super League and how I was an outcry against it. So what's the difference? So as long as I finish in my top six, and I'm pretty sure these kind of decisions were made for the likes of Arsenal and Tottenham Hotspur that they know cannot compete, if I'm not wrong. So that means if Newcastle finish seventh as long as Arsenal can finish in the top six, Spurs can finish in the top six. We know United too, they are rebuilding. So as long as United, Arsenal, Spurs can finish in the top six, they are guaranteed. And Chelsea, for all we know, we don't know what their next phase of life will be right now. But if they are as good as they are right now, they are guaranteed every time, every season. How does that bring the equality that was being preached against the Super League? Abkachi, I'm going to start with you. Because it looks like a Super League in disguise to me, if you ask me.
Yeah, but the only difference is that the Super League was going to be a league of just 10 to 12 clubs, as against having 36 clubs. So pretty much the role of Europe will still have representatives. If you win your league as a member of UEFA, you still get to go to the group stage. What really is different is the extra four slots that will make the number of qualified teams 36 instead of 32. And that's really where coefficient comes in, which is what have you done in Europe in the last 5 years, you know? So what they are trying to do really is, I wouldn't say reward the likes of Arsenal, but reward consistency for having traversed in Europe over the last 5 years. So you've done well in the Europa League, you've done well before in the Champions Leagues, and you just managed to miss finishing in your local league, your domestic league, in the Champions League spot. You would be considered based on what you've done in Europe in the last 5 years. So if you ask me why it's different from the Super League, is the fact that it is not elitist. It is still going to have 32 teams spread across the UEFA member nations. And the only four slots will be based on what you've done in the last 5 years. So that for me, I think is welcome. I still need to understand how it will work, because the way you made it sound, it looks like those two extra slots, two are already guaranteed in England. No, but just shaping up, because the English league tend to provide or produce teams that always get to the latter stages of major European championships.
Yeah.
Looks like, yes, two out of those four slots will always remain in England.
We both know that unless something happens drastically.
I understand. But it's more revenue. Teams now get to host a minimum of five games. And you know that the gate takings from hosting a UEFA Champions League game is higher than a domestic league gate takings. They also get four more exposure games because they play 10 instead of six group stage games.
Uh-huh.
And let's not forget that after the first eight teams automatically qualify for the round of 16, mm-hmm. the remaining eight teams will have to play a mini league / playoff, one-off playoff games to determine who goes. So the excitement is still there. The uncertainty, the benefit of this new format from the old format is that every game's become important. Because right now, we know that with the big teams, after the first four games, they get 10 points, they secure qualification. Games five and six most times become just a dead rubber games. Yeah. This time, all games become pretty important. We'll see how it works out. We still need to hear from the head of UEFA how these things will work out, but I'm pretty excited and I'm all up for changes.
All right, perfect. I know you are going to be all up. I'm happy again because that means Arsenal can qualify for Champions League, which means more revenue and ability to potentially compete within England. Olale, I'm going to come to you now. So Todd Boehly, who is
Me to say anything about the whole thing. He wants to
Okay. You want to say something about it. Apologies about that. Go ahead, please.
It was deliberate on your part.
It wasn't deliberate. This was not deliberate. I'm still fasting. I'm not lying.
Oh, you're still fasting?
Yeah, I'm still fasting. So I'm not lying. All right, okay. Your opinion okay, about this backdoor.
Well, it has some elements of trying to protect the elite team. They are just trying to probably modify it just to make it look good. I think that aspect, I think there are some parts of the whole thing that they've not really agreed on how to work out the modalities for those teams that's probably based on their, what do you call it, performance in the last 5 years and didn't qualify. I think that is a big contentious which they've not really agreed on. But on the format so far, on the old format, I think it's just a, what do you call it? Let me say they got their inspiration from the NFL.
Oh, okay.
From the NFL. Now, the NFL, they have the AFC and the NFC. But irrespective of that, what they do is, I think there's a total of 32 teams in the NFL.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah, they have 32 teams. And each team will play 19 games, which means you are not going to play every team. You are going to play 19 teams.
Uh-huh.
So you are not going to play every team all round. And you play the team you play at home, you are not going necessarily to play that team away.
Except teams in your division, yes.
So they will just have to do it. They have a way. So what they want to do is, I think what they are trying to do is get some blockbuster fixtures in the round robin stage. Right. So they will just probably organize a Madrid versus Barcelona match. So for me, but where they have to be very careful is to make sure, because if I'm not going to play everybody all round, they have to make sure the fixtures are a bit balanced. How does it favor me if I'm playing Barcelona at home, I'm playing Real Madrid at home, and I'm playing my smaller teams away from home? It doesn't look balanced. I would rather want to play Barcelona, Madrid away in a scheduled loss. I'm talking about from the sporting perspective.
Yeah.
Ordinarily, I know I'm going to lose to Barcelona. I'm going to lose to Real Madrid. Okay, let me cook my lose to them away from home. Then my own games, let it be against teams that I know we are of equal importance. So I think they
teams
need
like,
to make sure.
Teams like PSV, Arsenal, Feyenoord.
Exactly. So they need to make sure they balance those fixtures out so that you don't play too much of big teams. So that the fixtures will not be like one-sided.
Okay.
So but let's wait and see. It looks like something that will be a bit exciting, but let's just wait and see.
All right, perfect. So I'm not going to ask you the same question I wanted to ask you before, because you said something about this already. So I'm just going to move forward. Todd Boehly, the new Chelsea owner, potential new owner, what's the way forward for them? Is he going to be spending money? We've heard that what he did with the Dodgers in LA is to make out money. He's a calculative guy. He's a number guy. He's a numbers guy. He wants to make money. He wants to make money. And as of the time that I bought the Dodgers were a good franchise, but they, in terms of sporting ability, they were going down. They were down the drain. But he saw an inspiration like, okay, we're going to do this, put them on the advertising board. And first deal that I struck for them was about $25 million or $35 million, if I'm not mistaken. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kachi. That was the first thing he did with the Dodgers. And he brought them together with the legendary Magic Johnson, bringing him onto the board and making it a money-spinning avenue for himself. So are we looking at the same thing for Chelsea, Shehi? And if it does that mean the spending days of Chelsea are over? Because this guy is looking to make more money than putting money into the club. And I'm pretty sure he's crunching the numbers right now, and it's making sense, a whole lot of sense to him. Like, okay, if I put in, because Abramovich, they wanted the club to go for $2 billion. Abramovich said he needs it to be up to $2.5 billion to cover the charity, blah, blah, blah. So it looks like it's going to be sold for £2.5 billion. And that's a whole lot of money for Chelsea. I'm not sure Chelsea is worth that, but if they are, and he's been sold for that, it looks like the guy would want to make his money first before thinking of putting more money into Chelsea, given his history, basically. Shay, what would that mean for Chelsea? Not spending so much money like we've seen them over the years.
Yeah, obviously. That would just automatically translate into lesser spend in terms of investment on players. But at the same time, I think it will also make them go back to their soccer academy and exploit the potentials there. If you look at a lot of players in coming out from Chelsea Academy, they are scattered around the Premier League at the moment.
Very, very good players.
If they can't sign players, that's the first point of call for them. Bring them back home, try to regroup, and you know, utilize the small budget you have at the moment. Good for them, they have a good coach who can harness these boys. But at the same time, I fear for them losing some of their key players. I fear for them losing key players. I fear for them losing even their coach. But I still believe that they have a good foundation to build on. They are not in a promising situation. We can lie about that.
Yeah,
but I still believe they will see positives in all what they have at the moment, and they can build on it going forward.
I totally agree with you. Anyways, I'm looking at.
I wanted to add something, if you permit me. Burnley is not a stranger to sports. Let's not forget, it's not only the LA Dodgers owns. I think he also owns basketball franchises.
And
contrary to popular opinion, he's really not averse to spending big if he sees the benefits in it. The LA Dodgers, who were last baseball champions 2 seasons ago, and that happened because he shelled out good money to sign the best players in the league. Signed about three or drafted. In fact, they were not drafted. They were signed as unrestricted free agents to the Dodgers. So, and based on, and I was just reading up on the terms of the contract and why he was picked up as a preferred bidder. One of the U.S. merchant bank, the Rain Group, reportedly told the bidders before they and this is what he committed to, that they must commit at least £1 billion to future investments in the club.
Oh, wow.
And this includes, this money will be geared towards revamping the stadium, because right now the Chelsea Stadium, which sits about 41,000, cannot be compared to even their biggest competition right there.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, they will, part of that is they must keep the biggest silent name who has been involved in all negotiations, which is Maria Granovskaya. The Russian Canadian lady.
Yeah.
It is part of the guarantee. They have to keep her. And
they have to reassure to Tomas. She's a very good negotiator.
Exactly. That they have to reassure to Tomas Tuchel that he will remain at least for the first 2 years after any takeover. And then they will spend money for defensive reinforcement.
I think
these were all the conditions that Burley agreed to that made him the preferred leader. And he's not coming alone. He has a Swiss partner in the consortium who, from all indication, is an avid football fan.
Person,
I think, would be the one that would do the day-to-day discussion with Maria Granovskaya, like we mentioned, and also with Tomas Tuchel. So all this I'm saying, America knows, or an average American only knows the things from the cards, from the Fords to the Cadillacs. They don't know how to spend small. I think the only thing you would ask yourself is, will he be hands off, like what's the name
Roman.
Of the Liverpool owner?
Roman. Harry.
Will he be hands off and allow the actual experts to run the club? Or will he want to be hands-on, like the Glazers have been, even though they don't have football experience? That, I think, is where we need to get Burley himself to come out to give assurances on. If he can do that and reassure the Chelsea guys that I'm just here to pump in money and let the experts run the club,
like
Tom Henry is doing right now, then I'm here.
I would love to see it, because I tell anybody that gets to listen, since Abramovich came in 2004, that was the decline of my dear club Arsenal. So I want us to be on a level playing field. Honestly, unlike some clubs that have spent 1.2 billion, nothing to show for it. Chelsea has spent money.
There's a Europa League.
Europa League to show for it. Okay, sorry. Europa League after 1.2 billion. Continue. I'm wondering who is more where the ball sarcasm is, mine or yours? Europa for 1.2 billion. Olale, you want to say something to what is happening at Chelsea right now and what we should look forward to? I know you're not a big fan of the American owner.
I'm never, because see, the football culture is different from the American sporting culture. We just have to accept that. If you look at the way Spanish clubs were being run, if you look at Madrid and Barcelona and some other, just take a look at, go and read the history of Deportivo La Coruña, how they made it up from the lower division. The truth is, most European football clubs, the owners or the investors, most likely, I mean, the original Europeans, and that is where the Arabians are a bit more, are better owners of football clubs. Most football clubs are not, most of the owners are not really running them to make profit for themselves. Go and check the history. From Silvio Berlusconi to what's his name of Moratti. This Atletico Moratti, Madrid owner?
Jesus.
They, even when they come, when the clubs turn profit, most of those money are retained within the, what do you call it, within the club.
Yeah.
They hardly run them. And this is contrary to the American sports culture because it's a closed league. They have a franchise situation. And Americans are just business-like people. And another major, my own major concern is he a football lover? Because that comes in again. Of course, in the same American this thing, we saw the owners of the Rams. What was the name?
Stan Kroenke.
Okay.
I think the Rams has one of the probably biggest salary. What do you call it in the NFL?
Yeah.
But this, because I think they are
one of the 4.5 billion stadium in Los Angeles. Yeah,
exactly. You can't compare that same investment with what they put into Arsenal. So those are the things you have to. That's where my own fear.
But Olale, you must remember that Stan Kroenke does not own 100%. Stake in Arsenal. He's just the majority
He owns over 75%. He did shares of Arsenal. Hold on, Olale. Let me just clear Kachi first. He owns over 75%. He did an all-star bid from Usmanov. I said 75%. He owns more than 90% of the club. Are you saying
really?
Yes. They just kept a very little portion for
the fans. I stand corrected.
Another thing is this. Let's look at it from the corporate world point of view. The number of shares you have determines your say, which means as long as he has more than 51% in the company, the decisions about how to run the club still lies with him. So what I'm not sure. The lack of investment in Arsenal is a result of what do you call it? Frustration from the other shareholders.
No. The other shareholders are not even significant. Because the first thing he did after I got 51% of Arsenal was to do an all-star takeover and force Usmanov to relinquish his 40. I think Usmanov was able to gather 42% of Arsenal. So right now, I start to be corrected. Correct me if I'm wrong, please. He has over 90% of the football club. And the highest this man has been able to spend in a season was last season, I spent like £123 million. That's the highest in over 10 years. He got, what am I saying? Yes, now he bought Arsenal in 2006 after we went to the Champions League final.
But let me just finish my point. For me, that's where my own reservation comes in. Because the Chelsea fans should better prepare their mind for it. The kind of investment got under...
Olale, me, I'm waiting for it. We should be on a level.
All those assurance, like you rightly said, is for the first 2 years. What is going to do after 2 years? You never know.
Yeah,
they should prepare their mind. they should get closer to their Arsenal folks who probably they share the same office or the same hotels or the same whatever, and ask them for the past 15 years how are they, as in how they've been able to cope with those disappointments. Because exactly. I'm sure those disappointments
it's been 16 years, Olale, it's been 16 years, 16 years that this guy has turned our daddy club into something else. If we had Usman off, we too would have won at least one Champions League by now. At least one. And as a guy, would not be going around with a legacy of not having a Champions League gold medal. Anyways, I'll leave it as that. 42 in 42. The best striker in the whole world, 42 in 42. That does not stop his assist as well. Over 12 assists because of the season. Pushing Real Madrid to an undeserved semi-final in the Champions League. And of course, there are 35 league. Yes, now. Is it not the same? Kachi, you're looking at me. Is it not the same Madrid that lost to Sheriff at the start of the Champions League? Nobody even thought they were going to get out of the group stage.
So why did that make it undeserved?
Well, it makes it undeserved. We're not deserving it of it at the start of the season. If not because of the brilliance of Benzema. And of course, the errors of Eduardo Mendy. Probably we don't even see them in this. We'll be having a Chelsea Manchester. That's arguable, anyways. I know you want to argue with me. It's arguable, but I don't want your trouble. I concede for the first time. I'm conceding. I'm conceding. 35th league for Real Madrid, Don Ancelotti, Chelsea, Bayern Munich, AC Milan, PSG, now Real Madrid. Shehi, I want to start with you. We like to mention all the top coaches in the world. And, you know, anyways, everybody, my own best coach in the history of the world has to be Gusindik. I think he's the best tactician. But I'm looking at Ancelotti and I'm having a rethink. I think Ancelotti is the best coach in the history of the world. And people already started the argument that Ancelotti or Alex Ferguson. Which Guardiola or Alex Ferguson, who's better? And it looks stupid on the peripheral, but you look at it, he has done it in 5 countries. Ferguson did it in just 2 countries, you know. They have a good point, but if on the flip side, he coached the top sides that are expected to win leagues as well. But how would you place Ancelotti in the grand scheme of things, Shay? And I'm going to ask the same question. It's not going to be a different question from you guys as well. So just be prepared with your answer.
I think it's quite very easy question for me personally, because I've always been an admirer of Ancelotti over the years. And I recall there was a day, Kachi, I think you asked about who I would have preferred to pick up the Manchester United coaching role.
Uh-huh.
And I was able to pick out only one person, Carlo. And I have my reasons. I think over the years, at least for the last 2 to 3 decades, if you see what he has done, he has coached great players, young players,
mm-hmm.
average players, team that are actually almost going to the, you know, going under. He brought them up. So I think he has done almost everything in terms of coaching in Europe.
Sorry, I would like you to just clarify all those average players. A player came to my mind, but I don't know if I'm right. The first one that came to my mind. The first player that came to my mind was Baluda.
Oh, goodness. Anyway, quite a lot of players, average players in Chelsea when he was at Chelsea, won the league there. And if you notice also, he came to Chelsea as a coach that just came to, like, help them out of their woes at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And he still achieved.
No, Shay, I think that was Gusindik, Shay. He was fully appointed.
But they had their troubles before he came. I think
he started at the beginning of the season.
But they had a bad season.
Maybe they lost the finals before then.
So they were Yeah, exactly. So they were not really. They were not really a kind of a Premier League hopeful for that particular
season. Nobody thought they were going to win the league that season.
Win
Let's just
the
put
league
it
that season. And see what it did in that particular season. So, like I was saying, look at the players that this guy actually coached in his days in AC Milan. It was like a Champions League regular, talking about maybe the last four in the Champions League. So that we're talking of almost 20 years ago, thereabouts, or 15 years ago. And look at the same coach now in Real Madrid in the semifinal of the Champions League again and winning his fifth league in top five leagues in Europe.
So, yeah.
I don't think if you just want to put him on a particular holder, you just put him in that top five coaches that have coached in Europe.
Okay.
I think that is what I'll just say. Okay. Not to mention other coaches.
Okay. And would you love to see? I know you're an Italian national team supporter, at least from back then. I don't know if you've changed.
I know you
like them. Would you love to see?
Your memories are quite sharp.
Would you love to see him become the coach of Italy, taking over from Roberto Mancini?
Yes, let me say yes. I think that's the last thing I want to see him do. Probably after that, he can retire. Because
okay.
That's really what is left now for Carlo.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Kachi, same question. How would we honestly put rate Ancelotti in the grand scheme of things? And I'm talking about Johan Cruyff. I'm talking about Alex Ferguson. I'm talking about who else? I'm talking about those guys. I'm not talking about
Arsene Wenger.
I'm not good. Arsene Wenger doesn't have a Champions League, so honestly, I would not want to mention Arsene Wenger.
No, we can put you Arsene Wenger.
I would want people might say because
I'll put him there. I'll put him there because
hold on, Olale. I'll come to you, Olale. Just calm down for me, please. On the grand scheme of things, Kachi. I'm talking about the top. I'm not placing him with Klopp. Let me put it that way. I'm not placing him in the era of Klopp or those ones. I'm talking about grand scheme of things, the best that you ever seen.
Definitely we'll put him in the top three. Not sure. It could be anywhere between the top or the third, but definitely in the top three. I say that and I would try to back it up a bit. Of all the teams he has coached, you can never accuse any of those teams he's coached of playing a boring style of football. The style of football has always been, beyond being pragmatic, it's been efficient and it's been pleasing to the eye. That's why he could eat the humble pie, go to Everton, and still be poached back by Real Madrid.
That was surprising.
And we could see that, he has been an excellent ego whisperer all through the years. There's one statistics that I'm sure maybe Shayim knows it, but just didn't remember to say. He becomes, by getting as a Real Madrid to the semifinal, he becomes the first and only coach to have coached a team to the semifinal of the Champions League in four decades. That means in 40 years, this man has played efficient and eye-pleasing football enough to get a team to the semifinal. And if you include his career as a player, then he makes it five decades. That means for 50 years, as both a player and a coach, he has been always at the business end of the most important tournaments. So that lets me know that he is open to change. He evolves. He is not set in his ways. He has accepted that what may work 40 years ago may not work now. And he has evolved as a coach and as a human being, which is what you need right now. A lot of the stick that Mourinho is getting right now is that Mourinho wants to apply the 2004 metrics and 2004 methodology in 2022, which is why he's probably not experiencing as much success. In fact, I realized that is the case when I heard him after the game, the first leg of his game against Leicester City,
okay.
him praising Brendan Rodgers as much as he did. I was like, this is not the Mourinho I used to know. Anyway, I digress. Another reason why I want to put him in the top five is this
top
man.
Three. You said top
yes,
three.
Top three, rather. Top three is, yes, we have said he has only coached big name players. But when you see what happened with Chelsea in the second coming of Mourinho, what happened with Chelsea with Mourinho in Manchester United, what happened with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, you realize it is never easy to coach a team with big egos. And this man did it time and again. The 2003 AC Milan team and 2005 team and 2007 Champions League winning team, you can argue that every single player there would walk into any major team if they left AC Milan at that
point. 100%.
But there was no cause of a rancor. There was no cause of player mutiny. This guy knows how to bring out the best. I probably think whatever Zinedine Zidane was able to achieve, he achieved it from learning how this man does not shout, but still gets the best out of the best, or out of the great players, or even the average players. The only downside, or the only disadvantage or demerit you can give him is he never wins this leagues more than once. And I think that's the only thing you can hold against it. In Milan, he only won one. And in all the other leagues, he's only won them once. But give or take, this man is top three, definitely.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that. Olale, so I'm going to start. Why is Arsene Wenger part of the press, the elite coach? That's the first question. And my second question is going to be, in the grand scheme of things, how would you rate Kalou?
Cultural reset for me, for Arsene Wenger, cultural reset. I think there is this, obsession to probably look at coaching success just based on trophies and these other things. I don't think the way I've rated Arsene Wenger today would change if he actually won the Champions League. I'll still put him wherever I've actually put him today. Because Arsene Wenger changed a whole team culture, not now changing the culture alone. Arsene Wenger influenced the British football. That alone is enough. That alone is enough. Prior to Arsene Wenger coming to England, the way it's not like they don't appreciate technical gifted players, but the kind of it was something everybody embraced. Everybody wants to see the way back for everything we praise about the current Jurgen Klopp and we saw the same thing with the with the Arsenal boys. But unfortunately, probably because of that Champions that was missing, people don't know how good and how fearful those Wenger boys were. But that's aside, but I just believe whether is a all-time elite coach, whether we like it or not.
Perfect. So in the grand scheme of things, how would you rate Kalou?
I think Kalou, like I said about Wenger, I've always rated Kalou as a top, a top coach, as one of the biggest guys. I won't say top three, top two, because all these things are very, very, very subjective. Because by the time you start looking at the list, you look at the Arigosakis of this world.
That's the first person that came to my mind, and I'm thinking about Arrigo. I'm thinking about
Marcello
Lippi, Giovanni
Trapattoni. Look at Fabio Capello. Look at the man that worked with Liverpool for 44 years, that led them to three consecutive Champions League, which You look at the Dutch master who was the one Bosby. That Jurgen Klopp himself.
Coach Busby of Manchester United and the Busby
this list, the elite coaches we are looking about, we are talking about, there is a lot of guys there, which I wouldn't want to disrespect any one of them by ranking this one as number one or two. But for me, I've always rated Carlo Ancelotti. I think I've said this on many occasions, if not to you, I said, If you read the mixers, one of the reasons why Chelsea took Carlo Ancelotti was because of the kind of football his team played in AC Milan. But what they don't know is that Carlo Ancelotti's Parma team played one of the ugliest type of football, which tells you that this is a kind of coach that can suit any situation. That is what, because the way I actually gave Carlo Ancelotti respect was how he sorted out that Real Madrid team of 2014. That team was actually an unbalanced team.
Olale, can you come closer? I can't hear you very well.
I said, where I actually gave him the much respect is the way he sorted out the, what do you call it?
Playing a girl in the middle of the park and fitting all the guys.
Because that team was not balanced. He had to do a lot of tinkering up and down before. And that is one thing that Carlo Ancelotti is known for. He can play the sexy football. He can play the reserve football. He can play direct football. All Carlo Ancelotti looks at is, who do I have at
the personnel? The personnel.
That's what I've actually stood out for me throughout his career. Like Kachi said, probably the only thing is, if you look at that AC Milan team, I think when it comes to domestic titles, they really underachieved. I think they won the title only once, which was in 2014 or something like that. 2004, which was the only one. That team was so, it was so good that winning a league title doesn't do what they did.
Justice.
Like their legacy.
Justice the talent of the team.
Considering the fact that they even won two Champions League titles within that same period, and they only ended up with one. So for me, I think that's just only when it comes to, I think Carlo Ancelotti, the way he set up his team, he is more of a coach that is suited to cup competition than that team that state marathon type of what do you call it. So he has always, I've always admired him. I think he's a top coach. And one thing you have to give to him is, they're the same coach that have coached teams like Everton, Parma, Regina. So
Regina, yes.
He has not turned. He's a complete football man. He just wants to enjoy the game. It's not a matter of he has never been that selective. And you can't for all the places he has gone to, which is different from Mourinho. There is no place you say, no.
I know you have to, you and Kashi just need to bring Mourinho. All right, perfect. Thank you very much, Lale. You just have to bring Mourinho into the topic. Mourinho is sitting quietly in Roma. For crying out loud, leave the poor man alone.
His coaching, bullet can touch anybody.
He's coaching in the Europa League conference, not even the Europa League.
For my own
perspective, to give my own opinion about this, I'm looking at the top coaches like I mentioned before, the Brian Clough, the Giovanni Trapattoni. The first one that came to my mind was Zarigosace, Johan Cruyff. Of course, I don't know the older guys, maybe in the 1970s. I don't know those ones, but at least the ones I saw and I see them. I'm looking at them, I'm like, okay. In terms of man management, in terms of tactical play, I'll take Carlo above all of them, apart from Gusindic. Except for Gusindic.
You should have seen the Arigosaki Milan team.
I mentioned Arigosaki. Ancelotti was in
that was where Carlo got his coaching tree. It's from the Arigosaki coaching tree. He won the Champions League under Arigosaki,
yeah.
So I guess if there's anybody that will be above him, at least because I come from that tree, a son can never be greater than the father. You will put Saki above him.
But honestly, I'll just say Goose. I've seen Goose do some things that are unbelievable.
Chelsea, South Korea. I'm like, amazing.
It's not if I'm pretty sure if you're talking to even a football fan that's been watching since probably 1990, they'll be like, who's Gusindic? What did he achieve? I don't know him. But you see the tactical play, like, oh, this is special. You know, you see some special things. I'm like, this is real special. And of course, you can't overlook the achievements and the number of trophies that Sir Ferguson has in his cabinet, in his roster. You can't overlook that. I think that's the edge that Ferguson have over and above everybody. And that's why when I was asking Sheyi, I'm not talking about Pep Guardiola. I'm not putting Ancelotti in the league of Guardiola, Klopp, Mourinho. I'm not putting him in that level. He's way above those guys. I don't care what anybody says. Is way and way over shoulder above those guys. So honestly, don't let me ramble too much. Let's talk about, I don't want to talk about the The review of the Champions League looks a little bit stale. I don't know.
Talk about the preview of the second leg.
Preview of the second leg. Exactly. Exactly. Ah, yeah. Kachi, you look all jammed up right now. Real Madrid versus City. City are going to come back. I'm pretty sure Cancelo will be back. I don't know if Walker is going to be back, but they look like their left full back would be settled. But you can't take anything away from that 42 guy called Benzema. And the way Vinicius Junior is playing right now, it looks like a semi-world-class footballer right now. Honestly, what do you think is going to happen in the second leg?
I expect the second leg to be a mirror of the first leg, which means lots of goals. Madrid doesn't have a distraction right now because they wrapped up the league. They were able to rest some players. Marcelo even starting a game for the first time in a very long time. But Coach Pep came out to say if a rebranded Barcelona could beat Madrid 4-0 at the Bernabeu, that he thinks City can do it. I really still give a slight edge to City simply because they play better as a team. But individually, you just know that Vinicius and Benzema can cook up something. The one edge that Madrid has is that they get Casemiro back to show up that leaky middle of the park for them in the first leg. Mm-hmm. So based on that, and this is my heart talking, I want to give it 3-2 Madrid on the 90 minutes and then penalty Madrid to win.
Wow.
I think that goes to penalty.
Wow,
yes.
that would be lovely. I'll be on
Bold predictions right
now. I'll be on 3-2
Madrid. 3-2 Madrid, penalty Madrid.
All right, perfect. Olale, what about you?
For City, despite the fact that they finished the first leg with a victory, it will be the more disappointing going into the second leg than the Madrid. But on the part of Madrid, I'm not sure they should be that comfortable because they were very lucky to get away with it. That game plan ended like 6-2, 7-2. If Riyad Mahrez or Foden has probably taken their chance when it was 2-0 and made it 3, you could see Pep's reaction. He knows what it is. When you have the chance to kill off your opponent, especially a very good team. Football, team sport, it's all about momentum. When you have the momentum, you have to take advantage of it. But I think the only consolation for City is that they have, for Madrid to go to qualify for the finals without going to the shootout, they have to beat City by 2 goals. That is the way it is. The good thing for City is that there is no longer a away goals rule. If there was a away goals rule now, you could see some tactical play like, okay, let us hold City for like 7 minutes. Let's get a goal around that 70-something and let's see if we can hold on 1-0, we qualify. All those kind of permutations. So I think the game will be open. Madrid has, they have what you call it, the individuals to hold City on their night. I hope if City can get Walker back, it's going to help them a lot in this game. At least to keep Vinicius in
place. Vinicius.
As long as Pep Guardiola doesn't overthink this, as long as he just played a simple midfield, either Rodri, Gundogan, and Kevin De Bruyne, or Rodri, Gundogan, and Bernardo, whichever, we just do the normal thing you have been. I think they are the better team, and I think they have the capacity to go to the Bernabeu and get the result required and qualify.
All right. So what's your prediction? 2-0.
I think City is going to win on the night by probably 2-1.
Okay. Shei, what about you? Are you Oracle 2.0?
I think just like Kachi said, that this second leg is going to be a mirror of the first one. And like I said, it's going to be a high-scoring match, just like the first leg. But the difference is, I think Man City will be getting back their fullbacks this time around. For Guardiola to have seen what happened in that first leg, he needs to do something about that defense. Cancelo is coming back from suspension, so he's going to be back to the right side. That's what I think he's going to do. And personally, I'll actually play what's the name of the Dutch guy? No.
Nathan Ake
at the left back. I think that will cement the full back, the wings for Man City. And as we know the likes of Bernardo Silva, Mahrez will run riots. Anywhere they are, they are poor players. Over the two legs, I think City is going to win. But on the night, my prediction is 2-2 or 3-3.
Okay, wow. I don't know. I don't have a prediction. My prayer is for Madrid to win.
Your prayer, imagine.
I'm not in this regard. I'm not professional in any way, form or fashion. My prayer is for Madrid to win 3-1, no penalties. But one thing I can guarantee you guys is the fact that Pep Guardiola is going to overthink. You probably see KDB playing as a false nine.
No. I don't think that is new to him. It depends on who plays in the midfield.
Gabriel Jesus not playing, or he's going to start Fernandinho.
No. But they were.
Don't worry. God will protect
us. 2-3 weeks ago, did you expect Gabriel Jesus to start for City? Let me say, before that four goals.
I did not expect. But don't forget that.
Don't forget that
game that he scored four goals against Watford. Jesus did not start as the striker.
If he doesn't start Jesus, I'm not sure it's overthinking because that is what he has been doing for a while now.
I'm not saying that you probably play KDB as a first nine, bench, make Gundogan as his anchor, play six in front of the back.
I think as long as there is Rodri.
It would do something drastic. You see,
you want him to do something. Just say, I want him to be.
It's a pattern. It's a pattern. I'm pretty sure Guardiola would.
How many times have you seen the pattern?
Like three or four times now.
Three seasons.
Abia, we saw it at CSKA to Manchester City. He has done it.
He overthought it against Lyon in the Champions League. He overthought it against Monaco. He overthought it against Liverpool in the Champions League. He overthought it in the finals last year as well.
It's just Guardiola. I will not be surprised. He might get away with it, but it's just Guardiola. That's the way he does things. That's why I always keep Klopp over and above him. Anyways, Villarreal versus Liverpool. Olale.
It's a done deal. Liverpool will go through. I don't think Villarreal will not stop Liverpool from scoring at least one or twice.
One goal.
I'm not sure Villarreal will score them three times. I think it's just game over.
All right, perfect. Catchy.
Last week I thought Villarreal were playing at home. That's why I predicted the 3-2 scoreline. So I'm going to go with a 2-1 scoreline. I was looking at the statistics. Villarreal, the last time they scored more than one goal in the Champions League was sometime in the group stage. It's not something they do. They don't know how to score two goals. And because they will be more expansive, looking to quickly half the deficit, they will play into Liverpool's hands. And it's lights out right now. I think it's 3-1 Liverpool. 3-1 Liverpool.
Okay. Yeah. All right, perfect. Shay, and I'm thinking about it, like Klopp I'm pretty sure in his head right now, he's overthinking things as well, because he's looking at the league with one eye, the Champions League as well. That what do I want to do? That's why he kept Salah on the bench at the weekend, because he wants to win the league as well. And he's looking at the Champions League as well.
The truth is, let's admit, City has won this league. Wolves is not the Wolves that had Adama Traore that used to torment them. They should go for the treble and not the quadruple.
So what do you think is going to happen? Like, is he going to try to rest probably Sadio Mane, end up playing a draw in this one, or is it going to be a straight victory for them at Villarreal?
I think Liverpool are good for another win, even away at Villarreal, regardless of anybody that is resting. That's just the and you know what, Jurgen Klopp has also done quite well in terms of resting his players and, you know, refreshing them over the last 2-3 weeks. So anybody that's actually on the pitch will probably be, you know, 100% or maybe 90%. And guess what? If they are unable to deliver for the first maybe 60 to 70 minutes, there's always firepower on the bench. On the bench to bring and they sort it out.
The Liverpool legend on the bench.
So yeah, I'm telling you, Origi's on the bench. So basically, it's a straightforward tie for them. I think they will not play under pressure, and that would also help them to just win this match.
Due to lack of time, let's wrap things up a little bit more quickly. West Ham lost at home against Frankfurt 2-1. Shay, what's your call for the Breton leg in the Europa League? Quickly.
I don't want to say I was quite surprised, even though the way they won the quarterfinal, I was thinking West Ham is in it to actually prove a point in Europe. But at the same time, looking at, because I actually watched the Frankfurt and Barcelona tie, those boys are fluid. So quite fluid. So I'm not too, you know, positive about West Ham coming out of this.
You're calling it for Frankfurt, right?
Yeah.
Okay, exactly. Perfect. Thank you very much for that. Kachi, same for you, calling it for Frankfurt.
Yeah, same for me, also calling it for Frankfurt. I think they're just too good for West Ham right now.
Okay,
I can call it right now, Frankfurt to win the tournament.
Olale, calling it for Frankfurt as well.
West Ham winning 3-1 away from home.
Yeah, 3-1. West Ham win 3-1 for 3-1.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Lord Shishek scoring 2 goals.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm a little bit surprised. I'll be next week versus Rangers. What's your call, Lali?
I'll be Leipzig. Rangers to win by 2-0. We are going to have the All British Derby.
Olale is the spirit today. Please write it down, Kachi.
I'm writing it down. I think Rangers will get to the final. I'm only just sad that it is not Steven Gerrard that is leading this team to the final, because this is all Steven Gerrard's groundwork. Rangers to get to the final.
Wow, that's surprising. Shay, what about you? I'm starting.
I think Leipzig all the way. I think they're more technical, they're more tactical than the Rangers. Simple as that.
They have 25-18 in that team in RB Leipzig. 25-18, 25 goals, 18 assists in Kuku. Europa League conference. Europa League conference, Shay. Marseille versus Feyenoord going into the second leg. Feyenoord won 3-2 at home. They're going to France this time around.
Let me say Marcel will be good for the final.
Perfect. Shay, what about you? I said Shay, Kachi, what about you?
Yeah, Marcel as well. I don't think final has done very well away from home. I expect that to continue. Marcel to get the win. Get the win and the scoreline they need to get to the final.
Oh wow, that's surprising. Wally, what about you?
Dimitri Payet. To get myself through.
Oh wow, that's nice. Olale, Leicester City versus Roma, going back to Rome.
Leicester City, of course, disappointment for Jose Mourinho.
Oh my god. You're just an hater, Olale. I hate you too. Kachi, what about you? Roma, Leicester City.
Iheanacho to be among the goals. Tammy Abraham's efforts will not be enough as Leicester City will qualify for the final.
Oh my god, a bunch of haters. Shay, what about you? I know you're a United fan, for crying out loud.
Unfortunately, I have to go with Jose Mourinho. I think he's good. I think Roma will be in the final of the competition. Winning it, I'm not sure.
Okay. All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that. And of course, a roundup of league matches in England. I wish we could talk about this, but we can't for some My God, I wish we could. Everton defeated Chelsea. Chelsea in mud right now. Tottenham Hotspur defeated Leicester City. Like they are some log of wood. Arsenal fortunate to keep their goalkeeper while they won dubiously against West Ham away from home. 2-1. United are going to be playing against Brentford on Monday. And Newcastle lost in some controversial manner to Liverpool as well. 1-0. Burnley defeated Watford 2-1, confirming the relegation. Aston Villa defeated Norwich City 2-0, confirming the relegation of Norwich City. Brighton and Hove defeated Wolverhampton Wanderers 3-0 away from home. Crystal Palace defeated the conqueror of Arsenal, Southampton, 2-1 away from home. Manchester City could have scored 5 goals, but decided to stop at 4 against Leeds United to win 4-0. In Italian Serie A, Osimhen scored 1 while assisting another 1 as his team, I believe the one 5-2, if I'm not mistaken. I'm saying that off the top of my head right now because I'm trying to be fast. But of course, the 1-6-1 against Sassuolo. Victor Osimhen coming on the good start. Lazio defeated Spezia away from home 4-3. While Sampdoria defeated Genoa 1-0 away from home at home as well. Alex Verona defeated Cagliari 2-1 away from home. Juventus continue with the Bonucci brace as defeated Venezia 2-1. Milan are back on the top of the league. 1-0 against Fiorentina. The worst of Fiorentina that has lost 13 games this season already. Empoli were defeated at home against Torino 3-1. Udinese were defeated at home as well. The woeful Udinese against Inter Milan 2-1. Roma currently are playing 0-0 against Bologna right now. And as it stands right now, Milan are top 77 games. All they need to do is win their last 3 games. And no slips up for them to win the league.
2 wins and a draw. 2 wins and a draw will get us the league.
Yeah, okay. 2 wins and a draw get them to win the league. Real Madrid have won the league already. Nothing to talk about there. But Sevilla are back in second place ahead of Barcelona, who have a game on hand, as well as Atletico Madrid on fourth position. That's the wrap for the show. But I think we have a little bit of time. But Ali, should have been a red card for Aaron Ramsey before we go.
That should be. I think we just want to keep things interesting.
Okay.
Towards the end of the season.
Perfect, Kachi. Do you agree with that? A record for Ramsey?
I really don't think there's that much conspiracy theory. I agree it should have been the red card, but I don't think it's because they want to make it interesting. I think it's because the referees have been inconsistent all season long.
All right, perfect. Shay, do you believe it should have been a red card? Because the first thing that Ramsey was saying was it was not the last man. That was the first thing he said. That was not the last man. So it was thinking about red card, not even...
I think it was a dangerous tackle. Adi being the young man was just a little bit slow on the ball. That could have been a very bad tackle on Jared Bowen. But what do we know? The English refs know better.
All right, perfect. We'll look forward to the predictions and we'll look forward to the Champions League as we go into a new week. Thank you very much for staying tuned with us. Don't stop supporting sport. And this is New Season Star Sport. I think Adebo Ali is signing out. So we'll see you again next week. I love you guys. Bye.